Graduating seniors this morning, after immediately after service, with a fellowship meal and a slideshow presentation. We'll have all of that going on in just a little bit, so please make plans if you haven't already to stay. Just go ahead and stay. There is a lot of food back there. He said Larry worked really hard hours cooking, I don't know, 50 or 60 pounds of meat of all different kinds. So we greatly appreciate Larry and all the work that he did to help get ready for today. I know that's going to be good, so just hang out. What do you say to your young people, encouraging them in their, as they're about to embark upon the next part of their journey of life? And I've had the opportunity to do this for about 30 years now. It's been quite some time since I first started in youth ministry. Now, I know I'm not the youth minister right now, but I get the privilege, at least at this time, to say a few things. Ed's going to take over in just a few minutes. He's going to make some presentations, and he's put together a slideshow, and he's done those things. So he's going to have his thoughts for y'all in a few minutes. But I'm going to get to say a few things this morning in here. And I appreciate the opportunity to get to do that, especially today. And you know, I look back in my life, and there's been a few times that one of my children have been graduating, one of the graduates. And this morning, we're going to honor two of them, Taylor and Hayden also, along with Alyssa. And so what do you say? What are the things that you want to share with them, but with everybody? Because Proverbs 3 is not just for young people, it's for all of us. And I chose this passage because my favorite two verses in the Bible are found right here. I've signed a lot of things and put this passage in there under my signature on things, on Bibles and things that I've presented through the years to different ones, because of how important this passage has been in my life. And so in Proverbs chapter 3, I just want to share a few thoughts, a few different verses out of this chapter with our young people, our graduates, and all of us today. Life is about to change. There are things that are going to happen. I know in our house, especially one young lady is not going to have her mom talking to her every day, telling her what to do and how to do it and when to do it and how to dress to do it. And so as you think about every morning, it's going to be your choices about what you're going to do and how you're going to go about this life, the things that are going to be important. And I just want you to remember these few verses that I want to share with you today. Proverbs chapter 3, beginning in verse 5 and 6. He says, "Trust in the Lord with all of your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will make your paths straight." And that passage is so deep and so wide, you can study it for the rest of your life and you'll always learn something new each time you begin thinking about it. Every time that you hear these words, every time that you quote these words or you think about them, something new is going to happen in your life. Something more and more powerful and something stronger will happen if we will commit ourselves to these few little words. Trust in the Lord with all of your heart. With everything that you are, trust in Him. There are people who are going to tell you, here's the truth. Here are the things you need to know. And many times those things are going to be in opposition to what God has to say. There are going to be times in your life you're going to struggle. We all have. And that's at the point in our life when we need to back up and say, I will trust in my God. I will trust in Him with everything that I am, because I know He's never lied. He's never done anything to cause me to not believe and to trust in Him completely with every ounce of my being. Trust in the Lord with all of your heart. Do not depend on your own understanding or experiences. Because so many times in our life, people will tell us, you'll know when things are right. You're going to live certain things. You're going to go through experiences and you'll be better for it. And so when you go through those experiences and you understand those things, then you have all that wisdom because you've lived that life, and that's what you need to depend upon. He says, no, because you may make it through something in your life. You may make it through a really difficult time in your life and come out on the other side and still not believe in God. You may not be following Him. And so he says, trust in Him with everything, but don't depend on your own understanding. Don't depend upon the things that you can see, those fleshly things that we understand because we have those senses about us. He says, don't trust in those things. Don't trust in those things to teach you what you need to know. Listen to what God has to say. He is the one who created everything. He is the eternal one. Every day, he's saying, look to the eternal, because here's everything in our life. This is where it begins. Everything about this day should begin with God at the center point of our life. Every morning we get up, and before we leave the house to go to school, to go to a job, to do anything, it should be started with God in the middle of our life. And that single day that we don't do that, things are going to go wrong. It's just going to happen. Because when we forget to say, God, I want you in the middle of everything that I'm about today, then what we've done is we put God on a shelf and said, I really don't need you. I have all the understanding I need in my life. And we forget to acknowledge God. We forget to call upon Him to help us understand. So our relationship has got to begin here. He will make your path straight. And you look at a life. When you look back at your life at this point, wherever you are, and you look at all of those paths that you've gone down and every fork in the road, and whether you've gone left or you've gone right, if you went back and looked at that whole picture, if we were able to do that, how many times did we go down the wrong path? How many times did we choose a path that maybe wasn't the right one for us? Not the one God had intended. And so he's saying, if we trust in God, the paths that he will lead us down will be correct. You think about the friendships that you've made. You think about career choices and those kinds of paths. And at some point in your life, when we look back and we begin to evaluate those paths, did God lead us down those paths, or did I lead me down that path? How many times can we look and go, I sure wish I would have gone left instead of right, or I wish I would have gone right instead of left right there? God will never, if we allow Him to guide us and lead us, God will never take us down a path we don't need to be on. Now, He won't stop us if we force it, but He'll never lead us down somewhere we don't need to go. There's the beginning of this chapter in my mind. And so the rest of this chapter, there's a few verses that I want to share with you about this whole idea of trusting in the Lord. What does it really mean to trust in the Lord? And so the next few verses, let's look at these together. Verse 7, he says, do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. Do not be wise in your own eyes. And what he's talking about is arrogance. Don't be an arrogant person. You will never, listen to me, you will never have all the answers. I don't care how big of an education you have, how many doctorates you have, I don't care how much education you have, you will never, ever have all the answers. Do you get that? We will never have every single answers. And if you will, the greatest of all the thinkers, just when they've been struggling with something, some concept they've been working on for a long time, and they finally unlock and they have the answer, do they retire and go, whew, now I've got it? That's the last thing that they do. Because you get someone who's a really great thinker and they've struggled through an issue and they've struggled through a problem and they break the answer and they have the answer, they go, wow, look at all the other questions I have now. I get this. But now it's opened up a whole big, huge world of questions that I need to answer. And so don't get to that point in your life where you feel like you know everything, because you won't. None of us are ever going to know everything. But what I want to encourage our young people and all of us, even and regardless of what age we are, what we've attained, is to always be a searcher. Always be a questioner. Always be that one in the class that maybe even the teacher starts to kind of go, oh no, not again. But be that one that raises your hand and says, I don't understand. I have a question. Don't ever be embarrassed to ask questions. How are we supposed to learn if we don't ask questions? What does he say? Do not be wise in your own eyes. Don't think you have the answers. Search. Make sure you're asking questions all the time. Even as adults, we should do the same thing. Seek knowledge and understanding. We need to ask questions of wise people. Think about all the people in our life, and our young people especially, but all of us. How many wise people do you have in your life? Men or women that you say, you know, every time I listen to them speak, they have something worth listening to. Those are the people we need to be going to and saying, I have a question for you. Can you help me understand this? We need to be people who are not wise in our own eyes, but people who are always seeking, diligently seeking the wisdom and knowledge from God. The second part of that verse, he says in 7, fear the Lord and turn away from evil. Fear the Lord. How important is this idea? Fearing God, and that's not that trembling, I'm going to go hide and so he can't find me. God can find us wherever we are. That's not what he's saying. Fearing God is that absolute respect. God is wise. God is powerful. God is everything he said he is. And so I'm going to fear him. I'm going to honor him because he is worthy of my honor, of me honoring everything that he is. And we do that because of who God is. Who is God? How often do you stop in your life and remember who God is? What does it say in the beginning of Genesis? In the beginning, what? God created. Have we ever, as man, in our most brilliance, ever created anything? You hear people say it all the time. Well, I created this. No, you didn't. You didn't create anything. Our most brilliant scientists have never created anything. Now, we can manipulate things and change one thing into from what it looks like to it looks like something else. And we can change something from an inusable or an unusable form to a usable form. And we can do all kinds of things like that. But we have never created anything. Everything that existed in the beginning is still here today. Maybe it looks different, but in essence, it's the same things. We've never created. God did. In the beginning, God created. Who is God? He is the creator. He is the one who spoke, and everything that we see exists. The heavens and the earth, everything on it and in it, God spoke, and it came about. Who is God? God is the one who went to Moses and said, lead my people out of Egypt because I have made a promise 430 years ago and I told them I'm going to bring them out and I'm going to give them this land. As a matter of fact, I told Abraham, I have already given it to your descendants. And he says, now then, it's time for them to understand. And now it's time for them to realize that promise. So you go in and you lead my people out. And they get to the sea and there's the water. And on this side, there's the mountain. And they turn around on this side, there's Pharaoh and his army. And what are we going to do? We can't climb the mountain. We can't swim the sea. And we can't fight the biggest, most powerful army in all the world. So now we're doomed. Now we're lost. What does God do? He says, oh, here you go. Let me divide the sea. And you can walk across on dry land. Fear the Lord. We fear Him and we honor Him because of what He's able to do, whether it's creating the world and the universe, whether it's dividing a Red Sea, or in Joshua chapter 10, when he talks about, Joshua says, God, can you make it not get dark so we can keep fighting this battle? And so God makes the sun stand still for an entire day. Who can do that? God can. Who's the only one in the history of forever who's able to do things like that? Only God can do that. We fear God because of who He is and what He's able to do. God can create and sustain this world. God can divide seas. God can stop time. God can do anything that He wants to do. We fear Him, we honor Him, and we turn from evil. You think about this. He says, when you realize that which is evil, you don't hang out in the middle of it. What did Paul say to Timothy? Flee those things. He said, run as fast as you can to get away from them. Don't sit in the middle of it. And when people say, no, what you really need to do when people are doing all these bad things is you hang out with them and try to be a good influence. No, you don't. That's stupid advice. And I know some don't like that word, and I'm sorry, but it is. That is the worst advice you can give anybody, is to just go get in the middle of all that that's going on and tell them, it's okay, you just shouldn't do these things. I'll be here to support you. No, you don't. Don't listen to that kind of advice. God doesn't say, get in the middle of it. God said, run away from it. Get away from it as fast as you possibly can. Don't immerse yourself in that kind of culture, in those kinds of things, because it will destroy you. It will destroy your life. Flee from it as fast as you can. Fear the Lord. Turn from evil and get away from it. Why? Verse 8, he says, it will be healing to your body. It will be healing to your body and refreshment to your bones. When you've been exhausted, anyone ever been there? I mean flat exhausted. Your mind is not thinking well anymore. Your body just, I just can't do it anymore. What does it feel like when you get home and you take a nice long hot shower and you go climb on the bed with your ceiling fan going and the air conditioning turned as low as it'll go, or some of you not maybe that low, but where you like the climate, right? And it feels good and you just lay down and you go, and your eyes close and you sleep like a baby and you wake up, how do you feel? Man, I feel better. I feel good. And he says it's like that when we fear God and we honor Him and we turn from that and we do those things that He says in this world filled with ugliness and hurt and hate and all of that, and we turn from those things and we seek our God. He says it will be like healing to your body. It will be like refreshment to your bones, that rest, that good rest when you can go home and you can lay your head on your pillow and go, thank you, God, for loving me and taking care of me. And we just pass out. Fear God. It will be healing and refreshing to your bones. Verse 9, he says, honor the Lord from your wealth and from the first of all your produce. Here's one of those ideas that comes all through the Old Testament and through the Levitical, the priesthood, the sacrificial system. And their sacrifices were always to be the very first fruits. What does the first fruits mean? That means the best, the greatest that we have. And it's difficult to have this understanding unless you've been around it. But if you were raising sheep or you're raising cattle and you have that show cow or that show pig or that show sheep, the one that's most important, the most beautiful, the most perfect, it's the right height, it's the right length, it's the right weight, it does all those things. And going up with my father-in-law to watching some of the cows and he and him helping auction those things off. And I'm looking at these cows and I'm thinking, I think I've told this story before. The first one starts selling, and I'm thinking, did they just say they're in the thousands? That thing's 10,000, 15,000, 20. Is that in pesos? Is that? And it just kept climbing and climbing and climbing. Why? Because that cow was one of the best of the herd. Everyone looked at it and said it met all the criteria to be perfect or as close to perfect as possible. And God says, if you're that rancher, if you're that one that has that cow, then here's what you do. You offer that one first. But wait a minute. That's the one I get all of our babies out of. That's what I'm going to build my herd out of. God says, you're not building anything. You trust in me, and I'll make your life right. How difficult is it for us to give the absolute first and most important of anything that we have to God? That goes in all that we do. My paycheck, who's first in line for me to give what I have been blessed with? Honor God from your wealth, from the very first of your produce. Not the leftovers, not the bottom line, but every single time from the very beginning. That's faith. Do we have faith in our God? Then he says in verse 13, how blessed is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding. Don't settle for just information. Don't just learn a few things, ABCs, and say everything is good. Discernment. That's that wisdom. We can know a lot of things, but not know how to use that knowledge. And so wisdom is what we should be seeking after. We gain all this knowledge, but if that knowledge doesn't do anything for us, if it just becomes trivial, then we might as well go on one of those game shows and try to win millions of dollars, right? I don't know if that guy is still on the one here recently. He's been, I don't know how much money, it's just astronomical how much this guy has won on this game show. Because he's so smart, he's gotten so much trivial information, he can answer all kinds of questions about all kinds of subjects. But does it do any good if we don't put it into practice? If we don't allow it to make it wisdom in our life? And I think I mentioned this Wednesday night, but not all of you are here. There was a lady who posed this question. What she was asking is for anyone who could answer to help people define, if you will, success. How do you become successful? Will you help us become successful? And what she was asking is, what kind of advice do you have to make decisions to make you wealthy, or to make you where everyone looks at you and goes, that's who I want to be. I want to be like that. And I was reading down through a list of what people had given for advice, and I thought, boy, they have missed it. Everyone on here has missed it. And finally, way down, 50 or 60 pieces of information or advice, a lady said what I was thinking. And she said, you know, first off, I think we have to define success. How can we ever be successful if we don't even understand what success is? How do we define success? Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes 1 and 14, I have seen all the works. I have seen all the works which have been done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after the wind. He said, I've seen everything done. I've seen every kind of work, every kind of job, everything people have done. And what I back up and what I look at and I see all of it, he said, it's all vanity. It's all chasing after the wind. How many of you have ever chased after the wind? Anybody? How do you catch it? You can't. That's his whole point. Chasing after the wind doesn't do anything but maybe give you a little exercise. Doesn't help a lick. Ecclesiastes 2, he says, thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done and the labor which I had exerted, and behold, all was vanity. All striving after the wind. And then verse 13, he says, And I saw that wisdom excels folly, and light excels darkness. And he said, so I watched my life and I thought about everything that I had done and the mindset that I had when I was doing all of those things. And he said, I've done it all. I've done all kinds of activities. I've made everything with my hands. And he had gardens and he had palaces and he had all of these wonderful things. And he said, all of that was worthless. It did nothing to me or for me. But wisdom, on the other hand, excels all of that. Ecclesiastes, just write down in verse 17, he says, so I hated life, for the work which had been done under the sun was grievous to me, because everything is futility and striving after the wind. Now listen what he says, and I'm sure you maybe have read this, but the next verse in 18, he says, thus I hated all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun. Why? Why did you hate all of those things? Why did you hate that mansion? Why did you hate those vineyards? Why did you hate all of that? Because he said, for I must leave it to the man who will come after me. I've built all of these things, and I've stepped back and I look at it, and I go, I'm not taking it with me. So why would I build all of these things as a testament to me and how great I am, only to realize I don't get to take it with me anyway? How foolish is that? When all I'm doing is trying to build it. So, what is success in our life? Getting to the end of life and seeing great vineyards that I've planted, mansions that I've built, all of those things don't mean anything if we don't have wisdom from God. If we don't have that relationship with God. 4:4, I have seen that every labor and every skill which is done is a result of rivalry between a man and his neighbor. This too is vanity and striving after the wind. That old thing, gotta have it. Keeping up with the Joneses kind of thing. Don't get involved in that. Chapter 6, verse 9, he says, what the eye sees is better than what the soul desires. Listen, we'll close with this. What the eye sees, or what the eyes see, is better than what the soul desires. He says this is innate within us. This is how we are as humans. We depend upon our vision. We depend upon our senses to determine what is more important, what is absolute, what is what we should be about. He said, so our eyes, what our eyes see, is better than what our souls desire. This too is futility and striving after the wind. Spiritual will always supersede the physical. You see, God created us spiritual beings with a physical shell for a short time. That shell will be gone. Even if we live to 100, how short is that in comparison to eternity? And so the wisest man who ever lived says, this is what is important. When we chase after the physical things of this life, it is futility. It's chasing after the wind. Spiritual. Our spiritual side must always be more important than the physical. If we want to understand peace in this life. Emptiness. Always the result of seeking after to be filled with the fleshly things in this life. That's emptiness. And there's so many people filled in this world with emptiness because we keep seeking after those physical things. God says that's not it. Solomon lets us know for sure that's not what we should be seeking after. So what do? We seek God. Here's the challenge. In our life, no matter where you are, and we could go on through chapter 3, I have 4 or 5 more points. I'm not going to look at those with you, but read that, the rest of that chapter. Here's the challenge to each one of us today, and our seniors especially. What are we going to seek in this life? Are we going to allow it to be just the fleshly things, or are we going to seek the spiritual things in this life? Are we going to seek after God? Are we going to seek to Him to be the one to fill our lives with meaning? The way that we see and we interact with all the people in this world and all the things that we have at our disposal? How do those relate to God? And so we're taught if we seek His kingdom, everything else will be added to it. Everything else will be taken care of. Are you seeking the kingdom of God in your life right now? Only you can answer that. Have you allowed the things of this world to invert that? And maybe we struggle, I know we all do, with fleshly things, and we want to make the world, the fleshly things of this world, the most important, and we want to look through those things at what the kingdom looks like. But what we have to do is change that. We have to be able to look at this world through God's eyes. We've got to seek His kingdom first. And so of all the advice that I can give is this, is seek after the kingdom of God with everything that you are. Everything else will take care of itself. Where are you this morning? Are you seeking His kingdom? Is that the overriding thing in your life? Step back and evaluate your life and look at it. It'll be pretty easy to tell. Are you seeking God's kingdom? That's your choice, and that's the encouragement. Seek that, and everything else will be added. So this morning, I ask if you need to respond to His invitation in any way publicly for prayers, or you want to become a child of God this morning, we can do that. We can help you with that this morning. And so we just want to offer this invitation to you. If you need to respond to Him in any way publicly, we ask you to come right now while we stand and we sing together. Jesus waiting in the cold.